Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Hey, it's Tony, the Tony Pennicale.
And we got a lot of UFC stuff going on this week, but doesn't mean there's not a lot of boxing to talk about either. We got three nights straight here of UFC stuff. Fights going on actually right now. But we also have a lot of stuff to talk about with Tyson Fury wasting no time making a new story out of himself, in addition to for the winning of the title there from Klitschko. He's actually making some real big waves with MMA fans, in addition to women. I don't know if you heard any of this stuff, Tony, but the first headline I saw was Tyson Fury thinks the best place for women is on their backs. So, yeah, that's not a very popular sentiment these days. Then another headline said the woman's place is in the kitchen. That's another thing he said. So I guess he can't even make up his mind on that one. He was also reported for a hate crime, believe it or not, for something he said about being against gay marriage. On top of all this stuff, he's got to get into that debate. So, yeah, he's in a little bit of hot water. He's also been stripped of one of his titles because he wouldn't fight Dominic Brazil. So I guess the IGF is stripping him of one of the titles. So now there's two of the main titles that he won't have. Because Deontay Wilder has the other one. But, yeah, he's been in the news for some bad stuff. Yeah, we got some big fights coming up this weekend. We had a big fight last weekend. Didn't go quite the way you predicted, Tony. What happened?
What?
Daniel versus Peter Quillen?
Yeah. You know what's funny? I just got home and, just in time to see the fight. And, I like Dan Jacobs a lot. I was, happy that he, won that fight. But both men handled it with such class and grace. It was a great thing.
Right. Yeah, now, actually, I just posted a thing on my blog earlier. This is the very first fight they're going to show in virtual reality, whatever that means. No, Showtime's doing it. So check the blog if you want to check that out. I think it's like, I don't know if you need any kind of extra equipment or whatever. You just watch it on your TV, but somehow they're going to do it so it's virtual reality. Anyway, it is what it is. We got a lot to cover. We got Psychic Tom with us. How's it going, Tom?
Yeah, sure. All right, guys. Lots of good stuff. Yeah, I was checking out that virtual reality stuff. Man, I got to get into the 21st century, What a change. What a change from the old black and white. Wow. I mean, it makes you seem like you're right there.
Speaking of black and white, make a good transition there. Senator Harry Reid and John McCain getting together to try to accomplish a mission they've been trying to work on for a while. And you'd think with the president that we have in place, they would have been able to get it done already. But you talked about this on the show. Jack Johnson was a former heavyweight champion of the world, convicted of violating the Mann Act in 1912. For transporting a white girlfriend across state lines. So basically it was a junk charge just because he was black. They wanted to get him. So Reid has put into some big bill, this resolution with John McCain as well. They've been trying to fight for more than a decade, according to this article, to clear Johnson's name and renounce that type of Jim Crow era racism. But, of all people, they can't get Obama to sign anything to release the liability or whatever, do the pardon. So now they've tucked it inside a massive education reform bill that the Senate sent to Obama Wednesday on a vote of 85 to 12. So, according to Reid, that today Congress not only voted to restore this man's legacy, but also demonstrated the enduring power of America's national character. Today we showed we will never stop working toward righting our nation's past wrongs. It is time to put this injustice behind us. And Johnson defeated Tommy Burns in Australia in 1908 to win the heavyweight title. And obviously that caused a little bit of controversy itself. This article calls it a national hysteria that tried to set up a what they called Great White Hope, which is a nickname that Travis Kaufman had to get rid of. Remember?
Yeah.
Conversation with him. So get rid of that. But
you know what the sad thing is about that, though? Probably one person in 100,000 is even going to know anything about it or even care. They even knows who Jack Johnson is. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just becoming a curmudgeon, but it just seems like history is just not the topic anymore. And really, that was only, I mean, the overall scheme of things, 100-some years is not that long.
Right. Jack Johnson actually is gone already. He died in 1946. He's obviously not going to see it himself, but if he does get this pardon, it would benefit his family, I would think. And his legacy, of course, would no longer have any tarnish on it. Not that it really does for this, but anyway. Believe it or not, the last posthumous pardon was granted by George Bush in 2008. He pardoned a guy named Charles Winters. That's what Charles Winters did. He violated the Neutrality Act in 1948 for helping to transfer two B-17 aircraft to Israel. So you can't bring a random woman across state lines, but you can bring two B-17s to Israel.
You mean that was the last pardon Obama has issued? No presidential pardons at all? Zero?
Zero, I guess.
Wow.
Oh, posthumous ones. Which, you know, after you're dead.
It's amazing.
All right. So we talked a little bit about Tyson Fury before we got you on time. But there was some other stuff, too, with MMA that he mentioned, in addition to his controversial comments on women. He actually is accusing UFC star Conor McGregor of mimicking his style. One. That's kind of funny.
Oh, God.
Not just a name, I guess, but personality, too. He says, I think he copies me in everything he does. I was the first trash talker big time on these shores, Britain and Ireland, and all of a sudden he starts copying me, this Conor McGregor guy. I grew a big beard, he grew a big beard. I start talking bullshit about everybody, he starts talking bullshit about everybody. So if it works for everyone's champion of the world, it must work for Conor McGregor, some guy who's 140 pounds or whatever he is.
Jesus. 145. Let's get it right.
Fury told Ariel Helwani during the interview that MMA is for people who can't box.
Oh, my God. That guy is amazing. You know, I'm surprised McGregor hasn't responded. He's probably too busy considering what he's got coming up this weekend. But I would almost think he would say the reverse, that Tyson Fury copied him. Boy, imagine those two in a room. That'd be kind of fun, wouldn't it?
Especially like, you know, it's not like a literal thing.
Just not so much that. Just the trash talk between them. No, I started that. And it would just be almost like we're in sixth grade again, you know? It'd be kind of fun. Like to get them both on the show, maybe. We wouldn't have to do anything if they were both on the show. We could just ask a question and then just sit back and just listen to the fireworks.
He actually mentions, too, that Conor McGregor is what got him to watch MMA. And He says, because of the way he's carrying on, this guy, I see a bit of myself in this guy and wanted to check him out. I will be watching the Aldo fight because he's had a lot to say, hasn't he, Conor McGregor? And Bellator actually was flirting with trying to get Tyson Fury on board. We talked about that a few months ago. And he's been calling out Cain Velasquez. He says, I just want to fight the best stand-up fighter in the world. Whoever is the best stand-up fighter in the world, I want to fight him because I believe I'm that man. Okay. In the immediate future, though, he has to do some other stuff. He has to figure out rematch with Klitschko. Klitschko has stated that he will be activating his rematch clause in the contract, stating that, quote, failure is not an option, unquote. So we'll see.
All right, Tony, what is your first gut reaction without using your analytical brain? What is your heart telling you? What's your gut telling you about this rematch?
Okay, I'll run that by me and you're breaking up a little bit, Tom.
Okay, what is your gut telling you? Not your brain, not your logical brain, your gut. What is your gut telling you about the rematch? Just your first thought about it.
I don't know. See, I like to be analytical when it comes to these things.
Hey, Mr. Computer, shut the computer off and tell us what you really think.
and you know what's funny? And I tell people even when I'm at work, like, they always see me as, like, a really highly, like, emotional and, you know, energetic kind of guy. But when it comes to things, I am actually a lot more analytical than people think. Well, you've read my articles.
You don't have to convince us.
I nitpick everything.
You don't have to convince us. You have it broken down to what punches are going to land when. Okay, so I know your left brain works fine, but you know I know you haven't had a chance. Kind of an unfair question because you haven't probably had a chance to really delve into it. But to me, it just comes down to was my initial assessment because my prediction on the fight was wrong. And my analysis of it was maybe Klitschko just got old overnight, and that happens sometimes.
The
earmarks
of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with a rematch like that, it's hard because you got two Goliaths in there, and I think they both have weak chins, so they both played it safe, and it got to the younger man. You know, who was just younger and more spry, anything like that, that just was able to do more work. And Klitschko, he seemed like he got all over it. Now, can he make adjustments, or is he going to play that safety first style? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the question, because has it become so ingrained, because for the past 10 years since his last knockout loss, he's adapted that style. He's been very successful at it.
Yeah.
And so that's the question. At this late stage of his career, can he shift gears? That's going to be awful hard for him because if you've been doing something successfully for a decade, the minute something goes wrong, you're probably going to fall back on it. So that's my gut feeling at this point. But, hey, it's subject to change. We'll see how it goes.
Well, we have a ton of mixed martial arts, of course, to talk about. We have all kinds of events from the UFC. We got something's going on right now. I don't know what channel it's on, but UFC FN Fight Night, I guess. 80.
I think that's on Fight Pass, right? Or
it must be. I don't see it on Fox Sports 1. It's not on Fox. Those are the only places it would be on free TV. But let me bring up the results page and see where we're at there. Then we have the Ultimate Fighter finale, number 22, 22nd season. That's tomorrow night. Frankie Edgar versus Chad Mendez is the main event there. That's it from Vegas. We also have Artem Lobov, the big training partner there of McGregor, who was on the show. He is fighting Ryan Hall. 4-1. Artem is 11-10-1. Artem, actually, I didn't watch a lot of the show this season. It's probably the least I've ever watched The Ultimate Fighter since I became a real big MMA fan in 2006. So that's kind of rare. But I do know Artem lost and then was able to get a redemption situation going. So I guess this is he now made it to the finals against Ryan Hall. That's what it looks like. There's nobody else I can see really from the show in the upper part of the batting order here. So. Doesn't even look like they've used anybody from the show other than that fight. Unless I just don't know the names. We got Edson Barboza also on the card. He's 16-3, fighting Tony Ferguson, 19-3.
That's going to be a... Yeah, that could be some fireworks. Both those guys have been just hotter than a firecracker, so that's going to be fun.
And, I mean, this is pretty stacked here for Ultimate Fighting finale, Ultimate Fighter finale. We also have Joel Zahn here, guy, 25-10, fighting Evan Dunham, who's 16-6. Both tough guys, both very durable, both have some pretty impressive names on their fight roster too. Also, Jason Knight, 15-1, coming in to fight Tatsuya Kawajiri, who's 34-8-2. Experience versus talent there, I guess. And we've got Julian Arosa, 14-2, versus Vorosek. Probably not pronouncing that right. How do you pronounce WRZ together? I don't know. 10-2 is his record, Marcin. Then we've got Diego Gonzaga back in action again. 16-10. He's fighting Konstantin Erokin, who I've never heard of. He's 9-2.
You know, you wonder how many more chances Gabriel's going to get. I mean, I'd have to think he really needs to shine. I mean, things are going downhill fast for him.
Well, he is a recognizable name. He's got that big head kick win over Krokop that nobody will ever forget.
In 2007.
So I think as long as he says he can do it, they'll let him do it. And he has actually probably made a bigger contribution as a trainer with this Team Link that he runs with his main training people. Pretty good stuff. Does a lot in the Western Massachusetts area. Also, a guy who's been away for a while, Mike Pierce, coming back here. He's 17-6, fighting Ryan LaFleur, who's 11-1. That should be a really good match for the third fight of the night. Then we've got Joby Sanchez, 7-1, fighting Gene Herrera, who's 8-1. Joby's a former guest of ours. We had him on two weeks ago, a couple months ago, actually. We've got Chris Grootsmacher in the first fight of the night. He's 12-1, fighting Abner Lovaras, who's 19-7-1. So that's tomorrow night's action. Tonight, we actually are halfway through the card already. Kevin Casey versus Antonio Carlos Jr. is coming up. Actually, no, that was a no contest, accidental eye poke. 11 seconds into the fight. Jeez, must have been a hell of an eye poke. Kevin Casey, I don't know who got poked. But we also had Aljamain Sterling beat Johnny Eduardo by guillotine choke submission in the second round. The fourth fight of the night, Santiago Ponzinibbio beat Andreas Stahl by TKO in the first round with just 35 seconds left to go. We had Danny Roberts beat Nathan Coy by triangle choke, also in the first round, a little over halfway through, 2:46. And we've got Zubaira Tukhugov beat Philip Nover by split decision, and Kaylin Curran beat Emily Kagan by rear naked choke in the second round, the 4:13 mark. Still to come, we got Sergio Moraes versus Omari Akhmedov. Another, not a former guest, I don't think we've ever had him on the show, but I've interviewed him and met him. John Howard will be fighting Tim Means. And then we've got Elias Theodoro versus Thiago Santos. Sage Northcutt, really talented young guy. Actually, he's talking about the title already, fighting Cody Pfister in the co-co main event. The co-main event is Jim Miller versus Michael Chiesa. Well, is an interesting fight to me. Jim has been on a tear, then in a slump, and then back on a tear.
he's definitely in that very hard to predict category. It's just he's kind of like Frank Mir to me, that I get on Mir's bandwagon and then disaster, and then I give up on him and he shocks me. So and Miller's sort of like that.
And Michael is from The Ultimate Fighter. He won his season. Memorable season and situation because his dad was battling cancer the whole time and ended up dying. And he kind of got his name from dealing with all that and coming out, persevering, winning. He's kind of had a bumpy road since he got in and started going up in competition. He hasn't really been able to move up the ladder probably as much as he maybe wanted to. But if you beat a guy like Jim Miller, I think a lot of heads will turn towards him. See what happens. Paige VanZant, another young up-and-coming ball of energy is the way I like to describe her, because she just never stops. And very dynamic with her striking and grappling and all the moves she does. It's just, she never gasses out, ever. It's amazing just watching how much energy she has from belt to belt. Now, she is fighting Rose Namajunas, who was one of the top girls on The Ultimate Fighter a few years ago. So, it's big stuff. This is also big because this is at the Cosmopolitan Casino in Las Vegas. Not just big because that's a very big casino. This is the first time that they've been there. But also big because the Cosmopolitan just got a union contract. And the Fertittas are having their issues with the union, the culinary union out there in Vegas. Well, it was down to the Fertittas and their station casinos and the Cosmopolitan as the last holdouts that would not do the union contract. So now Cosmo does their union contract, and the UFC just happens to have a fight there the same week that they announce it. Pretty crazy.
Coincidence, huh?
Yeah. And I've been to the Cosmopolitan for some boxing matches, and it is definitely one of the best casinos on the Strip, period. I used to actually go to all the different fights and events and stuff. Anytime I would go to the Strip, I would park at the Cosmopolitan because of the parking is so awesome to be just, you know, the basics. They do everything right. The parking garage is just unbelievable. I mean, you drive down, right, any parking garage, you're going to drive around for a while finding a spot if it's a busy place. But there, they have a system where if the parking spot is available, they have a little green light over it that you can see from anywhere on that level. And if it's filled, it'll be a red light. So you just look for the green light. Pretty cool setup. Anyway, so that's going on tonight out there in Vegas. The Chelsea Ballroom there at the Cosmopolitan. They do a pretty classy job there. I will be looking forward to checking out how that looks. Anyway, so we got the Ultimate Fighter 22 finale out of the way. The big one, Saturday night, UFC 194, Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor. And obviously we've had some build up to this. And then some more build-up because the first one was postponed. So it's a big fight, and this is big for the UFC in general, big for Conor McGregor, big for Ireland if he wins. Even if he loses, it's still big. You know, because he's got a lot of people pulling for him. He's got a lot of momentum behind him as far as, you know, the wins he's been stringing together, and just the popularity of Conor McGregor from when he started getting in front of the cameras till now has just been growing exponentially. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens here. I still like Jose Aldo to win this one, but I'm not necessarily 100% confident that he will. I just
I think, Rich, great minds think alike. I mean, McGregor's got that Ali factor about him, that he's fascinating. Some people love him, some people hate him, but they're all going to be watching because of his mouth.
Right.
And I think that the question is, how will his cardio hold up? He's never went five rounds before. Aldo has. And I think on the feet, it's going to be a battle of leg kicks. If he can deal with those, if Conor can deal with those leg kicks, I think that it's his to lose if it stays standing. But on the ground, he really hasn't. I mean, I'm sure he has some submissions, but, you know, you look back, I was watching the Mendes fight. And on the ground, Conor really was not a really any kind of submission threat. So
right. We'll
see. And I think that Aldo's wrestling and Aldo's ground game overall, I think, is underrated because he's been so good on his feet. And I think maybe if he's getting lit up on the feet, that may be his best chance, get it to the ground. So it's a fascinating matchup. But, you know, Aldo's the underdog in this fight. Did you know that?
Really? I didn't know that.
And, you know, I'm scratching my head about this. I mean, of course, McGregor is freakishly talented. I don't know if you've seen any of the embeddeds, but he's doing this thing that there's a French movement, training parkour, I believe it is. It showed him out on Hermosa Beach. He was up on just doing some incredible balance work. I mean, the guy's movement's just in another dimension, but... Still, that doesn't necessarily translate into a W against an undefeated champion who hasn't lost a fight in 10 years and who's done everything that he could be asked to do, and Aldo's the underdog? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we'll find out Saturday. But I'm with you. I can easily see Aldo getting behind a bit early on, but I just think he's got that junkyard dog tenacity. I don't see him quitting, and I don't see him being stopped. So we'll see. Go ahead.
He has everything to fight for, everything to gain here. And even though McGregor doesn't even have the belt, he has everything to lose because, you know, he has to keep the hype train going.
Right.
Aldo, I mean, he's a hero in his country no matter what. No matter what. I mean, even if he just hangs with Conor, he looks like, you know, God's greatest gift to Brazilian MMA.
He's definitely in the Brazilian Hall of Fame, and that's saying something considering the champions they've had.
Screw you, Conor. I told you were going to get your ass kicked. That it's going to be way different story, depending on who wins.
But wouldn't you agree, though, that in Ireland, no matter what happens, Conor's still going to be the national hero in Ireland, regardless. I mean, if he runs into a punch the first minute, I don't think it's going to affect his popularity there. But it's going to derail the hype train, and Dana White's probably going to be on suicide watch. I mean, since he lost Rousey, and if he loses this one, it's like, oh, wow. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, okay.
But
he does lose, it's probably not going to be in the first round if you look at his records.
I understand that. That was just an example I threw out. But, I mean, I don't think it's going to affect his standing in his home country. But I do think it's going to be tough for the UFC hyperbole machine.
Rear naked choke submission. It was in the second round, 3:37 into the round at Jungle Fight 5. So it wasn't even the UFC. Since his time in the UFC, he's had every kind of result you can possibly have, except a lot of submissions for wins. But he hasn't lost. Actually, hasn't lost since three fights before he got into the UFC through the WEC.
Yeah.
Started his win streak. So he's 25-1. 14 of those wins by KO or TKO, just two submissions and 9 decisions. So, you know, if you can bring it into the second or third round, I think you've got to start favoring him. Unless it's just surviving, which I don't see him getting that far if he's just surviving. And then you got McGregor. If you look at his record, he has 18-2 is his record. 16 of those 18 wins are by KO. One submission, one decision. Since he's been in the UFC, that's where the one decision comes from. Max Holloway, back in 2013.
I remember that one. And then I think we have another dynamic also, that the fact that Aldo has had 7 fights in the UFC, 5 have went to decisions. Now, in the WBC, he was just a machine, just a knockout machine. And all of a sudden now, we've seen something level out a little bit. I mean, he's still winning, but it's kind of an open-ended question. All of a sudden, has he lost some of his power? I mean, he's only 29, but he's probably been fighting since he was 7 years old. You know, they start early in those favelas, they call them in Brazil, I guess, you know. So that's it. Yeah, favela. How is it? Favela?
Favela, actually. You're right.
Favela.
I call it the
Fox. Yeah.
Favela
but,
is the way it is.
You know, he's only about 6 months older than McGregor. There's really not that big of an age difference. And, you know, Jose's been, it seems like he's been around forever. He seems like an old man, but he's not even 30. So all kinds of questions. Big chess game.
I wish I could say that about myself.
Hey, you just stay on the step you're on, buddy. All of a sudden, you're going to get your 25-year-old body back. Then we'll be ready to go.
Nice. So, Jose versus Connor. It's obviously going to be the one everybody's going to be waiting for, but there's no shortage of good fights on this card because we got 2 title fights. We got Chris Weidman versus Grappold, which is really second fiddle, big time. I really haven't seen or read or even talked to anybody about this fight. We didn't even mention it last week.
Okay, well, look, if you go on the Underground, right in the news section before it flips you over to the forum, they'll have embedded 4, and after that's over, you can go back and catch, and they're only about 8 minutes each. But there's there's quite a bit on there, and I really think you'll enjoy it.
So that's going to be a big fight. I like Luke Rockhold's chances. It would be, since Daniel Cormier did it, it would be the first one since him, I think, that's come over from Strikeforce and showed some dominance and got a title. But, one knock he could have on Cormier, he didn't get it the way he was supposed to get it.
Right.
He fought once to defend it, but, this would be the first time somebody from Strikeforce, other than Ronda Rousey, of course, who invented it, basically, to get her title. And she was already champ over there, too, so that was a different story. But, yeah, this would be the first time somebody comes over from Strikeforce, takes on the legit champ, and beats him if Luke can get this win. But Chris, the one thing about Chris is you cannot sleep on that guy. He could be getting his ass kicked, then turn around and knock you out. So I really don't know what to say.
How I see it, I think that Rockhold's going to be ahead early. I mean, his movement is outstanding. And again, he's one of those tall, lanky southpaws that are just a nightmare to fight. And he really doesn't have too many weaknesses on his feet. He's not the most powerful guy, but he's smart. He's quick, and he has a good defense. Now, again, he's never went 5 rounds before. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be a big issue, but I know that Weidman is not going to slow down. And it wouldn't surprise me to see Rockhold get off to a lead, but then that Weidman train just is going to keep coming and just keep coming and keep coming. So I have to go with Chris. I don't know if Chris will stop him, but I think if it goes the distance, my money's on Weidman. But it's so razor thin, though. I mean, talk about great matchmaking. I mean, this is a fight that had to happen. There's no question that Luke has earned it. He's the number one challenger, and I think we'll be in for a good show.
And we got Ronaldo Souza. The Arm Collector is his nickname. 22-3, fighting Yoel Romero, who's 10-1. And this has got to be a match that determines who fights the winner of the co-main event.
And this one could be a main event on most cards too. I mean, just when you consider Romero's athleticism, that guy's on another planet. But then Jacare's, his jiu-jitsu is, you seldom see anything better. So What a battle this will be. And both of them are pretty good on the feet, too.
Yes, sir. And if that's not enough, we got Demian Maia, 21-6, fighting Gunnar Nelson, 14-1-1. You know, another Brazilian jiu-jitsu professional there in Demian Maia. He's a very technical fighter, too, and Gunnar, I think, is more of a brawler, so this is going to be a clash of styles big time. And, you know, it should be entertaining either way. Then we got Max Holloway, 14-3, fighting Jeremy Stevens, 24-11. And Stevens, if I remember correctly, am I thinking of the right guy? Is he the one that his last fight, he ended with a fadeaway knee? That's the one?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's a pretty heavy underdog going into this. Very heavy underdog.
In that fight, up until the point where he landed that crazy knee, but unbelievable shot. But he is always one of those guys that doesn't get a win easily. You know, I mean, look how many fights he's had. He's got 35
total. He's very unpredictable. And you can't count him out. I think if I go for an underdog, it might be him. And he's I believe he's like a plus 450. So, big underdog.
Holloway is not all that impressive. I think he's just fast. He's very fast, and he's a technical fighter, too. He doesn't really forget about defense too much. He fights smartly. He doesn't get himself in a lot of trouble. But he's got three losses, so Jeremy Stevens hoping to add one. And we got Uriah Faber also trying to get himself a title shot. I don't know if this is going to do anything towards that, but he's 13 going up against Frankie Sains, who's 11-2. And he insists that he should get a title shot if he beats Frankie. But I don't know. I don't know if that's a good equation to be trying to work through there. I don't know how that Frankie Sands, who's ranked, but I don't know how beating him takes you to a title shot. I guess you have to ask Uriah Faber about his logic on that one. Then we got another Ultimate Fighter alumni, Tisha Torres, the Tiny Tornado. She is...
Your tornado, though.
What a name. I just love that name.
Justin Jones Liebarger, who's 6-1. And then we've got Worley Alves, 9-0, fighting Colby Covington. Covington, who's 8-0, so somebody's always got to go there. And Kevin Lee, 11-1, fighting Leonardo Santos, 14-3-1. Dur, 11-3, fighting Magomed Mustafayev, who is 12-1. And we got second fight of the night, John McDessie, 13-4, fighting Yancy Medeiros, who's 11-3. And another Ultimate Fighter alumni, Court McGee, 16-4, fighting Marcio Alexander Jr., 11-2. That's it for that one. And let's see what we got for boxing coming up. Also, just a couple nights ago, Tuesday night, we had Fox Sports.
Garrett Wilson, you know, he put on a good fight against Keith Tapia. He just couldn't get inside Tapia's reach consistently.
Right.
And Tapia won, Little Tito got carried out.
How's he doing, by the way? Have you heard about that, Tony? But that Garrett Wilson is so durable. You know, Tapia is saying I'm going to get him out in the first round, and I'm thinking I don't think so. Garrett Wilson's just got that durability factor about him. He just looks like it.
Well, we've got a couple other fights that were on that card too. Chad Dawson, one of my favorite fighters back when he was with our former guest there, John Scully. Come back after a long hiatus to beat Shuja El Amin, who's only 12-8. But Dawson's 32-4 going in at light heavyweight. And obviously it was success for him. I don't know how good he looked because I didn't watch it myself, but that's a big name to get back into it, you know, and it's a good time with the Premier Boxing Champions doing so many cards. So I'm sure he'll find work easily. Now, yeah, his last fight was October of 2014, so it hasn't been that long. But it was against Tommy Carpensi, and he lost.
That was an upset, too.
Foxwoods.
But you know what, he didn't do enough. I mean, it wasn't a good fight. It wasn't exciting. I watched it. But he didn't do enough. And Carpensi took that into a title fight and didn't have too much luck.
Right. So he took a year off, obviously. He got a little bit better. He got a unanimous decision win by a landslide, too. I mean, 10-9 every round, according to the scorecards there in this one. We'll see what happens with him. Bad Chad. Then we got the stuff coming up this weekend, of course. A lot of big fights. Over in San Juan, Puerto Rico, we have the vacant WBO World Super Bantamweight title on the line between Nonito Donaire, 35-3, and Cesar Juarez, who's only 17-3. That should be... a lot of experience in Donaire's corner there, helping him win that one. But we've also got Felix Verdejo, 18-0, fighting Joseph Nilsson dos Santos, who is 27-3. That's for the WBO Latino lightweight title. It looks like at least they got two Latinos fighting for it.
Yeah, right.
And we've got Gamalier Rodriguez, 25-3-3, fighting Jonathan Perez, who's 33-13 at lightweight. No title there. Not a whole heck of a lot on there to complement those fights. Let's see. So we got DeMarcus Chop Chop Corley, former guest of ours, is in action in Houston tomorrow night. He is 42-25-1, fighting Valentin Holovko, who's 21-0 at welterweight. We also have Bryant Cruz, 16-0 at lightweight, fighting Dardan Zanunaj, who's 10-1. That's an 8-rounder. The main event is Regis Prograis at super lightweight. He's 15-0, fighting Abel Ramos, who's 14-0-2. That's going to be on Showtime. Guess who's promoting that one? Lou Chavarese and Lou DiBella. Okay, so let's check out Saturday. So, next, moving into Saturday here, hopefully, any second. Thank you, BoxRec, for being so slow. Oh, still on Friday there. There's a good fight over in London. Tamuka Mucha at welterweight, 11-0, fighting, a name you gotta like, Tony. Tommy Tear, 10-0.
That's a good name. I like it.
On a tear. 10-rounder for the welterweight BBB of C Southern Area title. BBB of C, if you don't know it, is the British Boxing Board of Control, I think. Instead of their athletic commission, they call it that for some reason. So now we're into Saturday. Vic Darchinian is fighting this Saturday in Australia, of all places. I've been thinking about Vic a lot, too, because, you know, the Ronda Rousey interview came out first time since the fight. She's had a real sit-down interview, and some of it was pretty brutal. I mean, I haven't read the whole thing because it hasn't fully come out yet, but there are some leaks. And she had also apparently said that she is not changing camp. She's going to stay with this Edmund dude, Edmund Tavernier. And the time Vic fought, guess who's in his corner? Edmund Tavernier. And if you can't do anything with the talent that Vic's got, I mean, I don't know, I think you got problems. And then Vic was taking on a tough guy, but basically all he was doing was throwing roundhouses and haymakers. And that's how you train boxers. You know, you're not going to do very well with Ronda. But Vic comes in at bantamweight at 41-8-1, fighting Chris Paulino, who is 14-2, and guess what? For a title. The vacant WBC Asian Boxing Council Super Bantamweight title. Neither one of those guys are Asian. I guess they do consider the Australian region as part of Asia, as far as boxing goes anyway, for these titles, because I have seen a lot of Australian guys. That's kind of a situation. Over in Belgium, we also have a fight this weekend on Saturday. Islam Tafahi, 17-5-2, fighting Sheldon Moore, 15-3-1, for the vacant WBC International Silver Super Welterweight title and the WBC Francophone Super Welterweight title. Where the fuck those are? The winner's getting one, both of them. And the co-main event is actually for a title. Timur Nick R. Hoev. He's 6-0 at middleweight, fighting Ramazi Gogic-Ashvili, who is 28-2, 20 wins, losses, 2 draws. This is for the vacant WBC Youth World Super Bowl title. It's going to be funny, too, to check how old these guys are. What makes it the super middleweight title? I want to know. It'd be funny to see if they're both like 40-something years old. But it's for the
young and hard.
There's also fights going on in Denmark on Saturday. Actually, I think, weren't they the country that just decided to hold boxing events after years of banning them? I thought I remember something about that. About on the show a while back. But anyway, Patrick Nielsen is in the main event. He's 27-1 at super middleweight, fighting Rudy Markison, who is 39-3. No title there, though. That's kind of fucked up. couldn't find a title somewhere? Come on. Yeah, a super featherweight fight here. Dennis Seelan, who is 16-0-1 versus Walter Estrada, 46-18-1. That's an 8-rounder. And the main event is a 12-rounder. It's not even for a title. Okay. 21 is one guy's age in the youth title, and the other guy's 22. So I guess, yeah, he qualifies. Anyway, also on the Denmark card, we've got Tim Robin Lihaug, who is 14-1, versus Joseph Rax, who's 5-4. Decent middleweight matchup here between Abdul Khattab, 12-1, and Francisco Cordero, 31-4. We got a cruiserweight fight. Guessing these Nielsens are related, Mickey and Patrick. Mickey Nielsen is 19-0, fighting Konstantin Semerjej, who is 33-16-2. Nothing really else worth mentioning on the rest of that card. Oh, I think we got the mismatch of the week here in France. France is good for that kind of shit. Frenois, who is a super lightweight. He is 38-1. He is fighting Alex Jaluviev, who is 4-36. So, yeah, talk about underdogs. Don't bet your house on that underdog. There's another one. He's the only fight on the whole card over there in France. Romain Garofalo. He's 8-0 fighting David Afonso Pereira, who's 0-5. not the mismatch of the week, but definitely a mismatch. And we've got fights over in Germany, of course. We've got Wenzel Arik, who is 22-2, fighting the Zoltan Serra, who is 21-6. This is for the IBF East-West Europe Super Welterweight title. Another new one. Also on the card, Bisar Nemani, 19-1 at Super Welterweight, fighting Ferenc Hoffner, who is 25-8. And we've also got another title on the line, vacant Global Boxing Council Super Lightweight title. And I don't even want to try to pronounce these guys' names, but I'm going to have them. Kwame Foley-Kuega, 12-3, versus Bakhtiar Isgandarzada.
Pretty good.
Guy fighting in his debut here at welterweight, Branimir Stankovic versus Alexander Abramenka. His record is 17 wins, 50 losses, and let's see what else we got. I think that's about it, but we'll go to page 3, see what we find. Hungary match going on also on Saturday. Imre Zello, 9-0, fighting Saeed Mbuela, who is 33-17-4. It's a 10-rounder. Zello is 9-0. That's cruiserweights. Another Zoltan is in the co-main event. Zoltan Kovacs, 14-5-1, fighting David Kovacs, who is 16-14, just for the Hungary super featherweight title. WBC World Female Flyweight title is on the line over in Mexico, down in Mexico. We've got Jessica Chavez, 24-4-3, fighting Simona Galassi, 23-4-1. Now, that's very rare for two women to fight each other with over 20 wins these days. That is very rare. Now they're fighting for, of course, pretty good stuff. But sex, it has to be in Mexico, you know? That sounds like a great fight for U.S. TV, something they could do with Premier Boxing Champions and make it a headlining event. But no. It's a...
You and our fun line on site.
You got to find Mexico Televisa to watch that shit. We also have the main event is minimum weight fight. Saul Juarez, who is 22-4, versus Oswaldo Novoa, who is 14-6-2. And also have some more stuff going on in New Zealand. Here's an opponent for you. Nicholas Charalampos, who is 9-0 at light heavyweight, is fighting Aswin Kabui, who is 16-54-4. 54 losses.
You got it somewhere, yeah.
Yeah.
Never give up. Never give up.
Yeah. We were talking about that the other week with Rodney Moore, right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Winner
never wins, and a winner never quits.
Another card
right.
In the Philippines, in Manila. The vacant WBC International Flyweight title, we've got Jimel Magramo, 14-0, versus Jenny Boy Boca, who is 10-2. Only one. Nothing crazy good on that card other than that one, though. There's a few cards in the Philippines going on this weekend. Yeah, a Polish card this weekend, too. Saturday in Poland, we've got main event welterweights, Rafael Jakowicz, 46-14-2, fighting Michael Sirowatka, who is 13-0 at welterweight. That's the main event there. Biggest fight on the card. Yeah, Moscow fights this weekend. Lightweight main event. Vage Sarukhanian, 11-1-1 versus Ray Laspinas, who is 20 wins, 11 losses, and 6 draws. Up for the interim WBC Eurasia Pacific Boxing Council title. Yikes. You can't even fit that on the belt. Manvel Sargsyan, also 9-0 at super lightweight, is fighting Ryan Sermona, who's 18-7 for the vacant WBC Eurasia Pacific Boxing Council super lightweight title. Say that 10 times fast.
Yeah, right.
And then, you know, if that's not enough fighting in Moscow, you got 2 fights in the same night in Moscow, same city, different arenas. One is at the Club the Artist, it's called, the one I just read. Then we've got this other one in Moscow at the VTB Arena. And the reason why this one's at an arena is because guess who's headlining?
Right.
I didn't read this anywhere else beforehand instead of stumbling across it. But Roy Jones Jr.
Yeah, I called it. And that was a pure guess.
He's 2-8. He's now a Russian citizen thanks to Putin hooking it up for him. Fighting guess who? Enzo Macaronelli.
Really?
7. And I'm going to have to check because I know it has to have been a while since we've seen him fight. I would say he retired in like 2010 or something.
To Macaronelli?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because I was saying by father. He had a big fight with, I thought he was long done. I guess not. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. I forget who it was, but I thought he was done. Roy Jones Jr., his last fight was, again, October of, actually this year, I thought it was last year. And he got a TKO win over a guy who was 12-16. He's obviously been fighting journeyman. His last big fight was a loss back in sports against Jürgen Brammer for the WBA light heavyweight title. He hasn't had his own title since, he won the Commonwealth. No, wait. The Commonwealth British Empire light heavyweight title against Oval McKenzie back in August of 2013. I guess he never fought Roy Jones Jr., though. So we'll see how that goes. It's going to be Roy's stiffest competition in a while, that's for sure.
More than anything, his health is not compromised.
Well, we also have a whole shitload of other big fights on this card. We've got not so much big names, maybe big in Europe, but big records. WBA Continental Super Middleweight title is going up for grabs between Dilmurad Satibaldiev, who is 9-1, and Roman Skarupa, who is 27-4-2. It's another 12-pounder. Then we got the WBA International Heavyweight title fight here between Alexander Ustinov, 32-1, and Alonzo Butler, who is 30 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw. And we got a pretty interesting light heavyweight matchup here between Stanislav Kovshinov, who is 33-2, and Bernard Donfack, who is 22-13-3. That's a 10-rounder. And we got another 10-round middleweight fight between Dmitry Chudinov, 16-1-2, and Benjamin Simon, who is 26-2. We're still in Saturday. Over in the Ukraine, the Sport Palace, we have Alexander Usyk, 8-0 at cruiserweight, fighting Pedro Rodriguez, was 22-1 at Cruiserweight for the WBO Intercontinental Cruiserweight title. And finally, we get back to the United Kingdom there. We've got a couple of interesting matchups. Lightweights, Kevin Mitchell, 39-3, versus Ismael Barroso, who's undefeated, 18-0-2. At the Olympic great, Anthony Joshua, getting a great start to his career. He's 14-0 already at heavyweight. He's fighting Dylan White now, who's 16-0. So somebody's always got to go there. Also on the line, we've got the Commonwealth heavyweight title, the vacant BBBFC British heavyweight title, and the WBC International heavyweight title. So Anthony is moving up in the world there. Tony Bellew, also at cruiserweight, 25-2-1, fighting Matus Mastrnak, who is 36-3. That's sort of vacant EBU cruiserweight title.
So what was his name again?
Who? Which one?
Yeah, the guy you just mentioned.
Matus Mastrnak.
No, the guy before that.
Oh, Tony Bellew.
What was his name again?
Bellew.
Pretty Ricky Conley.
What?
His name is Pretty Ricky Conley.
Why do you say that? Tony Bellew?
Because Tony Bellew is the guy that played Pretty Ricky Conley, the main antagonist in Creed.
Oh, okay. That's funny.
Ah, yeah. See, think the tornado forgets these things. I'm not only the Rain Man of boxing, I'm the Rain Man of boxing movies.
Huh. Well, that's not fair.
Especially when it came out in the last month.
Yeah, Tony Bellew, he's been around a while. 25-2-1. His last fight actually was his, that's not his last fight. His only loss was to Adonis Stevenson, 22, his only loss by KO, I should say.
I mean, he did a tough fight. I mean, he did a respectful showing of himself, but he was just outdone.
And that was for the WBC World Light Heavyweight title. Yeah, he's trying to get back in the picture. Well, everybody who's anybody over there in the UK, though. All right. So, also on that card, if that's not enough boxing for you, we've got Luke Campbell versus Yvonne Mendy at lightweight, the WBC International Lightweight title. Luke is 12-0 at lightweight. Mendy is 32-4-1. And we got a really nice middleweight matchup for no title. And it really should be. Chris Eubank Jr., 20-1. Fighting Gary O'Sullivan, who is 22-1 at middleweight. And you might have thought this guy retired already, but now he's fighting for a title. Paul Malignaggi, 34-4.
What? Wow.
Fighting Antonio Moscatiello, who is 20 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw. And the only reason I could think for him doing this is because he wants to go out with a win and some hard work. To pick a guy who's only got 2 losses, I don't know. Still going to pop. So on this card, against TBA, which is too late to have TBA. I'm sure they figured it out. I just haven't told the boxer. Eric Cora at head 25. From the O2 Arena there in London. I didn't mention that. We got a lot of other stuff in the UK. We get, well. We're still on Saturday. Then over in Glendale, California, we have a HBO Latino card. Kathy Duva and a couple other promoters are involved in this one. Sullivan Barrera is in the main event at light heavyweight. He's 16-0, fighting Caro Marat, who is 27-2-1. This is an IBF light heavyweight title eliminator. And we've got super welterweights, Pedro Campa, 18-0, fighting Aaron Herrera, who is 29-3-1. That's a 10-round. And the WBO-NABO middleweight title is grabbed between Eric Magomedov, 16-0, and Jonathan Tavira, who's 12-3. Splo Maguia, also in action at welterweight, 22-9, fighting Egidius Auskas, I guess. 10-0. We got Francisco Santana, 22-4-1, fighting Armin Ovsepian, who is 4-5. Crazy on the card. A lot of stuff going on Saturday this week for some reason in boxing. And it's not even Boxing Day, which has nothing to do.
I know, that's my favorite holiday of the year. I don't care that it has nothing to actually do with the sport of boxing. I celebrate.
So the big premier boxing event this week is Texas. Omar Figueroa Jr. versus Antonio DeMarco in the main event. And Antonio basically was retired when he came back for his last fight with Premier Boxing Champions. He didn't look very good. he's going to make a go of it this time against another undefeated guy. 25-0-1 is Figueroa. DeMarco is 31-5-1. And also on this card, two former guests of ours fighting each other. How often does that happen?
Not often, but we've had it.
Yep. Come on, man. See if you can remember.
Well, repeat that. My printer's acting up on me. I couldn't hear you.
Where was the last time we had two former guests fight each other?
Well, didn't we have the woman? Didn't we do a show and we had both opponents on?
Yeah. Oh, that's not.
Yeah, I remember that.
Count. I'm talking about. We had on different shows. When was the last time that two boxers had a fight against each other?
Yeah, I don't remember offhand.
Offhand? It just happened.
Well, when was it?
I'll give you one of the fighters, then you have to come up with the other one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Antonio Tarver and Steve Cunningham.
Exactly. I knew you'd get it.
I think it doesn't happen often.
All right. So, yeah, this one is Chris Areola, 36-4-1, fighting Travis Kaufman, who is 30-1.
Yeah, that is correct.
Fun fight.
Travis, that'll be a tough fight. I know Travis has had some up and downs, and I know he had some layoffs. And two guys are big guys. These are two punchers. So, you know, it's a fight, it's not going to be pretty. I'm not going to be technically savvy. It's going to be a fight that's, it's going to get sloppy at times, and I don't think you're going to see much in the way of defense. I think it's going to come down to, one, how much Areola has left. I think he's been in a lot tougher fights, and he's taken, more punishment throughout his career. And the other thing that I really think is going to have a big deal on this is who comes in better shape. They both had some battles with the bulge.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll definitely keep an eye on that. I know has only one loss on his record. Areola has been on some of these Premier Boxing Champions cards, and he has looked like shit both times. Unfortunately, he got the win the first time, but he looked like crap doing it. So if I had to put money behind this, I think I'm going with Kaufman. But the championship not too long ago. So, he's got potential. It's just that his defense needs to be number one. Definitely looks like a zombie sometimes. But his last win was a second-round knockout of Epifanio Mendoza. That was in September. So, actually, last person he fought with only one loss was Vincent Thompson, and he only had 13 wins. And that was in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, back in 2014, last year, January. For the interim WBA Fedolatin heavyweight title. But unfortunately, I guess they're not fighting for that this time. So also, we've got Terrell Gausha, 16-0, at 2-8, fighting another former guest of ours, Saeed Al-Harak, who we interviewed before his fight on...
Yeah, with him. I remember Saeed.
Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather card there. So he got that big opportunity, took advantage of it, got the win. Now he's third tier here on this card. Good stuff. We'll get to actually see him instead of hearing about how he did this time. Also, we've got Hugo Centeno Jr., who's 23-0, fighting Josue Ovando, or Josu, I don't know how you say that one. He's 14-7 with one draw. And the big one that's kind of a surprise on this card is Victor Ortiz. Hasn't been around in a while. He's 30-5 with two draws, fighting Gilberto Sanchez Leon, 33-13-2. And we don't have an opponent listed here, but Dominic Brazil, 16-0 at heavyweight, is slated to fight somebody, TBA, to be announced. So we'll have to keep an eye on whoever that becomes. That's about it for this week. Good stuff. So tune in next week. And that's all we've got for stories, subjects to talk about. That's everything. I'm tapped out.
No tapping out.
And Tom, I'm sure you'll appreciate this. I bought myself an early Christmas present, two early Christmas presents, actually. One of them is the first 20 years of the UFC, like a documentary. But it's kind of interesting. Just watching it, I'd never seen this particular version before. And I was particularly intrigued by the fact that it was put out by the UFC itself, the current ownership. And it's about how they bought into it, how they created the climate that exists now, basically, and the popularity, and how they lost money and everything. And it was kind of interesting to me. You have the whole thing called the Zuffa myth, where they say that they were the ones that changed the rules, as in the current ownership. They were the ones that got it regulated and got the pay-per-view all straightened out. But you watch this documentary, and it tells you over and over again that it was while the other ownership group was involved that they changed all these rules. And the stigma was still there.
Exactly.
Even after. And then the other thing that came out of this documentary that I thought was pretty funny is that you know how much Dana White gets all kinds of credit for, you know, revolutionizing the sport, making it what it is and all that. Well, in this documentary, really the only people that give Dana White credit are the Fertittas, because everybody else is giving the Fertittas the credit. Because in reality, what I've been saying for years is it's their money that did it. And for some reason, they got through this documentary. they didn't do the fact-checking that they wanted to try to reinvent the facts on this one, because it was a pretty good show. Just basically went through everything and went all the way up to women getting into MMA and Ronda Rousey making her name for herself and all that. But it was very light on the Dana White is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and very heavy on the Fertittas put this thing on the map with their money. Well, I like that.
How was the coverage of the early days, like 93, 95, you know, back in that time frame, did they cover much back then?
Yeah, actually, they had all the old players on there, which was pretty interesting to me. And I never knew that Joe Silva was on board from pretty much the very beginning with Semaphore Entertainment Group.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea he had been with the company that long. So he's got to be the longest tenured person in the UFC, period, unless there's somebody else they kept on. But, you know, they had Campbell McLaren was interviewed on there, Art Davey, Horian Gracie was a big part of the whole thing. They had a lot of interesting people talking about the whole situation.
Yeah.
But they never brought
There was so much behind-the-scenes stuff back then would have been fascinating.
Right. That really helps, you know, because I haven't really been a huge fan of watching all the early ones, except for whatever I saw on Spike back when I really didn't follow the sport. But they used to show the old reruns on Spike every now and then, and I'd watch them just to watch them, but I wasn't interested in doing it or writing about it back then. It's just kind of like a spectacle. So now I'm getting to see all that stuff, and it's already something I've been wanting to write about as far as the money situation in mixed martial arts and how the Fertittas got to power by screwing everybody out of their money. So it makes sense that they screw the fighters over. So I've always wanted to write a big article or maybe even a book called Show Me the Money, you know, kind of trying to force the UFC to open up their books and talk about the real fact of why they don't give the fighters more money, because they want more for themselves. But there was one point in the movie where the documentary where they're talking about how the Fertittas are saying, well, we didn't know how much of our family's money we wanted to spend on this. And they were about to get rid of it. This is a famous story. Like, they were going to sell it. And then Dana called up Lorenzo and he said, let me sleep on it. And then the next day he said something like, you know, screw this, we're going to do it. So that was kind of interesting to see it. See them sort of admitting, sort of letting it out that it's not the story that they told to a lot of other people of how this thing got put on the map in the first place. The other one I bought was the 100 Greatest Fights in UFC History for $35. That was an 8 CD set, and I just started it. So I'm way more educated when it comes to the best UFC fights ever.
Well, I hope that they have some of some of the most significant ones too, going back to those early days, because there were a lot of game changers then, like with Maurice Smith and Mark Coleman. That fight's very rare, and in fact, on YouTube, you have to pay to see it, which I'm sure no one does. But I have that version, and that was a gigantic change, because at that point, up until then, the wrestlers were just on a roll. They were a freight train, an unstoppable freight train. And Maurice Smith pulled off an astonishing feat, learned enough about the ground to hold Coleman off. Coleman got tired, and history was changed. And then with the advent of Marco Huas back in 95 and Don Fry in 96, we started to see the hybrids back then. And some of those were really big developments, because up until then, everyone was one-dimensional. So I know you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I just watched Carlos Newton versus Pat Miletich. That was number 98, I think.
What a freak show that was. What a freak. Carlos Newton, and he started off in extreme fighting. That was the Penthouse Bunch, Bob Guccione guy, I guess. Yeah, those are some old ones, too, if you can. There were only four of them. I haven't watched them in years.
Pat's actually married to a woman with the same last name as me, for a maiden name, Bergeron. I'm not related to her, but it's kind of funny. I found that out when I interviewed him out in Iowa back in 2007 or something. I did it because he was involved in doing the color commentary for that bomb of a mixed martial arts show that turned out to have some of the best fights I've ever seen on the card that nobody got to see. Unfortunately, but yeah, that's a good dude. You got caught though in that one, and it's something you probably never see again these days. It's like a headlock that Carlos just strength to clean him in. And I was fascinated by the replays, because you can see when they show his arm wrapped around the dude's neck. Like, you can see like 800 little fucking bulges from all his different muscles in that arm. It's huge. It's just popping out. You can tell he had that shit on, so he was never going to let go until that guy was out. That's good stuff. Also, I did want to mention, I don't know if it was just announced, but we just put out on the blog this story today about Archer Spilka will be the next challenger for the WBC heavyweight title against Deontay Wilder. Tickets will go on sale Monday for this one.
Yeah, real quickly, didn't Spilka get knocked out by Brian Jennings?
Probably.
Yeah, he did.
And this is going to be the first heavyweight title fight in Brooklyn since James Jeffries knocked out James Corbett in the 23rd round on May 11th, 1980, out at Coney Island. And it's going to be a Showtime fight. Not really much news about who else will be on it. And I don't even know if it has the date in here when it's going to be. It should. There it is. January 16th. So look for that one. And we'll be posting some more blogs up tonight. So stay tuned to Fight News Unlimited for all that stuff. And I did promise last week I was going to do my testosterone report, but that's going to have to wait. So we got busy with the firewood, so... I know, excuses, but we'll get it out, and we'll let you know when it comes out, so you can see it. So until then, next week, we'll see you later, folks, and we'll try to get somebody up to in the fight world, too.
Sounds like a plan, guys. Let's enjoy the fights this week.
I like it. Yeah,
all right,
absolutely.
Over and out.
Absolutely, baby.
Come by.